This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Battle for Malaysia on BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Jahaba Sadiq, a veteran journalist and editor of the temporarily suspended Malaysian Insight. Also, Bridget Welsh, associate professor of political science at John Cabot University in Italy. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's very exciting because we still haven't got a significant number of results to call the election, but we are seeing signs of where the country is going. We just had James Chin from the Asia Institute in Tasmania, and he has told us that it's a real game changer there in Sarawak, with potentially a doubling of parliamentary representation for Pakatan Harapan, going from some 6 seats to perhaps 12 or 13. Also, the possibility that Warisan, that leads the anti-Barisan National Forces in Sabah, taking the state, that's a potential also on the parliamentary side of the Sabah game, possible gains there as well. So I want to begin with East Malaysia. In many ways, us in the peninsula, we discount what's happening there. And of course, for decades, they have felt neglected. They're seen as a safe deposit for the Barisan National. Perhaps that narrative finally has come to an end. Bridget, I want to get your thoughts on what you're seeing in terms of news flow, in terms of the suggested trends in Sarawak and Sabah.
Let's start with Sarawak. Sarawak, as was mentioned, we're looking at anywhere from 11 to 13 parliamentary seats, and seats that were perceived to be lost, such as Sarike, seem to have scraped through in favor of the opposition. The most interesting gains are not necessarily in the urban areas where the DAP held on and won back many of those seats that had lost in the state elections, but in the interior areas. Of the three Bidayuh seats, we see two seats that have been won by the Pakatan, and we also see seats that are also in the other areas of the Iban communities and other, and that is, I think, very surprising. What's going on? I think that first of all, the BN just took Sarawak for granted. and the opposition was working very quietly on the ground and has made traction. I think also there has been a gradual sense of empowerment growing in East Malaysia, a sense of confidence of their place in the system. And I think we see that they spoke loudly in this election.
Jumbo, what do you make of this unfolding story of Sarawak and the quite phenomenal gains, considering that Barisan National Sarawak has a unique identity, even within the family of Barisan National? It's had its fights with Barisan National Peninsula or the national level leadership in terms of state rights. It has a very strong, it sounds almost oppositional sometimes when you listen to what comes out of Sarawak. What do you think happened? We don't have the final numbers, but what do you think is happening?
I think it's very simple. Sarawak BN has always acted as slightly opposition within the national BN. If you go to Sarawak, it's a very different state and different feel. People in Sarawak are very comfortable with the BN government. They speak English, everything's in English. It's pretty much not what West Malaysia is. But I think there's been a lot of resentment about what's happening. And in the last few years, things like 1MDB hasn't been answered by local politicians in Sabah and Sarawak. I was in Sabah. I didn't go to Sarawak. It's very interesting that they run a very local campaign on very local issues. It seems like Sabah and Sarawak is, of course, a great distance from Putrajaya and the problems that the federal government has. But somehow or other, because of the internet, because of issues of the day, because of wages, because of rising costs, it all lumps itself together. And I think the people in Sarawak, particularly rural people who have to work very far away from Sarawak or Sabah because there are no job opportunities there, think they need to send a signal to Putrajaya that, you know, you can't take us for granted.
You know, what was interesting, of course, the debacle of the midweek polling date is bad enough in the peninsula, worse off for those Sabahans and Sarawakians who work here, who have to spend extraordinary amounts of money to return and time to travel to their home. Clearly, that did not affect voting trends, if at all, because we were expecting midweek polling to have an effect on the outcomes in Sabah and Sarawak.
When I visited Sarawak, it was very clear that local organizations were paying for people to come home. They had a lot of people who were actually, they sponsored to come back to vote, especially in these close races, such as was perceived to be close, Cebu, which has now seemed to be won quite strongly. So I think, for the opposition, I think we see that there was mobilization of voters in Sarawak to come back.
Now let's move to Sabah, because there's two games, because we know that Sarawak has went to the state game year or so ago.
2016, yeah.
So it's been some time since that. They don't have their state and parliamentary games at the same time. Sabah does. Sabah, of course, has had UMNO there for some time now. Now the split in UMNO following the sacking of Shafi Abdal, because launched the Warisan movement. He's been tell us. Jabba, what do you sense about the way in which Shafi Abdal has been able to pull this together for Warisan? They're really the dark horse in this race, weren't they?
I think it's very interesting because, you know, last election, Shafi was on the UMNO side and Warisan side. And I covered him in Labuan. I met him. And interestingly, he's talking about Sabah for Sabahans, issues about, you know, job opportunities, cabotage, free port, all kinds of things. He is speaking more as an opposition leader than any opposition leader ever spoke in Sabah. And these are issues which rankle with the ordinary Sabahans. And I think coupled with the fact that Musa Aman, not too bad a chief minister, really, done a lot for Sabah, but he's been there too long, 15 years. And this time, I think the fight in Sabah was really about the Bumi Putra ground. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Kadazan ground, because they become a kingmaker on their own as a different community. But the Bumi Putra, Muslim Bumi Putra ground is changing. I think they don't see Musa Aman as one of them. You know, he's not Bajau, he's not Suluk, he's got North Indian descent, right? So it's time for Sabahans. When I was there, they want someone local. They want us a Bajau back as a chief minister and to deal with Putrajaya.
Okay, before we get to you, Bridget, on the Sabah story, we actually have Tien Chua. He's on the line. He was the Batu MP who was not allowed to contest. He backed in independent. And thank you so much, Tien, for joining us. Tell us what is happening there. Have you have the results come in? Is it official?
Yeah, well, we, according to our own Saluran, we have already got about more than 50% of the vote counted. And we are confident we have already taken two. Well, the SPR Center is still showing that we have a slight lead, but all indications show that we are heading for a crushing victory.
Was this, Tien, was this a surprising at all, considering the huge majority that you received at the last election?
Well, it's going to break my record.
And why do you think that is?
I think definitely Batu people are very upset with the way the SPR handled the issues. And they do not want Barisan Nasional to come in through back door. And definitely also the issues about the national mood and the swing, it also helped in gaining momentum. But it is incredible that an independent, in a very short time span, I think it was after the court case have ruled that I cannot contest, we were left with 4 days of campaign. We were able to convince the majority of Batu voters that the independent is a candidate endorsed fully by Keadilan, which is part of the coalition of Pakatan Harapan.
Thank you so much, Tien. That was Tien Chua, former Batu MP, speaking on developments there. Looks like the margin of victory is going to be higher for an independent. I believe Prabhakaran, his name, will be the youngest MP in Parliament, a man who's got some interesting ideas about making the city more livable. That's one of his kind of millennial-type dreams. What do you make of this, especially because, again, at the center of this story is the conduct of the Elections Commission. Bridget.
I think a lot of the tactics that the government has made here have backfired. And I think, you know, the more they pull down flags, the more people get angry and come out to vote, and some of those who wouldn't have voted. And I think, you know, that has not worked in the government's favor. And it's not unexpected.
Yeah. No, I like to think that the EC is independent. And by proxy, what they've done has just basically hurt Barisan Nasional. People are taking out their anger against what EC rules are going on about removing pictures of Tun Dr. Mahathir, all kinds of things, right? And so how do you... And postal votes are taking a long time to go from London back to KL. So people have to take out the anger somewhere. Right, and I think Batu is the perfect receptacle for this. At any other seats in the city, people just say, I'm going to punish you, and the only way I can punish you and remove you EC people is if I change the governor today.
That's a fascinating. So we're going to be coming back also to that debacle in Kampung Medan, where voters are refusing to leave a polling station or have gathered outside because they feel they've been denied their vote. We're going to be looking at that after this break. We have Tokyo Police Club with Hot Tonight. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Bold factual media. BFM 89.9.
Thank you so much for staying with us. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Jahabar Sadiq. He's a veteran journalist. I like to say that because it makes
his
eyes...
I'm not that old.
He makes his eyes roll. And because he's the editor of the Malaysian Insight. And also Malaysia Decides, I believe, is something that's part of your family of media products.
Yeah, my colleagues are running that. I'm here on BFM today, courtesy of BFM, to enjoy the good food from BFM.
Absolutely. We have a lot of good food. We're not serving it and dishing it out just yet, not on air anyway. Now, also with us is Bridget Welsh. She is an associate professor of political science at John Cabot University in Rome. Her latest book, co-authored with Greg Lopez, is entitled Regime Resilience in Malaysia and Singapore. And very timely too, because resilience is what we're looking at. Something, the narrative seems to be shaking that resilience. You know, this is, you know, first in the form of alliance, and now, of course, the Barisan Nasional held this country together, or held and control this country for now 60 years or so. Things are changing. We were talking about Sabah and Sarawak. Let's go back to the Sabah story. Let's start with the state story, because that's actually fascinating for the, I guess, the longevity of any political formation. If it can capture a state, then perhaps it can survive beyond the polls. Now, what do we know, Bridget, of that Sabah story? We were talking about Shafi Abdal, his particular ability to pull this off. When I say pull this off, we don't have official numbers, but it looks like the numbers coming in, at least unofficial numbers coming in, trending towards Warisan winning big in the state of Sabah.
Well, I think, you know, as Jahaba was mentioning, the person I would emphasize, not besides Shafi, is Musa Aman himself. You know, he slated 5 members of his family. 5 members of his family. You know, 15 years and 5 members of your family don't go down very well.
This was, in fact, a meme, I think. Like, it was the Abang, Ipa, you know.
I mean, and so forth. I mean, and I think we see this was, and I think he became a focal point at the local area. It's also very interesting for Sabah history. You know, we have a very, we have a group of people who, the Bajawam Suluks, who came in under the Mahathir Project IC. These are people who were deeply resented for changing the composition of the state. And now they are allying with the groups that resented them the most, the Kerezans, the Dusuns, and Muruts. And so you're seeing changes not just on the East Coast, but also on the West Coast. And Warisan's has had, I think, arguably some of the most emotional and powerful social media videos with talking about the Sarawak stories and the Sabah stories and the Sabahan, what it means to be Sabahan and to come together. Out of everywhere I traveled in this country during this campaign period, it was definitely the most intense in Sabah on the ground.
Jabba, you traveled in Sabah as well. If Warisan takes the state, would you be surprised?
I'd be slightly surprised. When I was there, they were so confident of taking the state. They were talking about getting at least 35 of the 60 state seats. And I was wondering where the confidence came from. But I followed them around, and I reckon that people were just waiting waiting to change government. They did it in 85. Sabah sustained...
When PBS came to power, kicking Bajaj
out. And the reality was PBS actually contested 60 state seats. All the state seats. There wasn't 60 then. All the state seats and won power. Warisan with 45 and giving up some crucial seats to their allies from Pakatan Harapan showed in their own minds how big they were. They decided they have a partnership and they showed their confidence in saying, don't worry about it. They told their local members, we will win the state. It's amazing. Surprising if you've never been to Sabah before. It's amazing and not surprising if you know Sabah electoral history. They are capable of pulling this off anytime they want.
Bridget, what do you make of this? What is the shape of the Sabah state government going to be look like? It's going to be a Warisan plus Pakatan-led state if this comes to pass?
If it does. But I think one of the things that's most interesting about Sabah is that, you know, they have always felt that Sabahans can be bought. and the carpet bombing, which is a technique of throwing money, started on Sunday. And it's been going on for days. You know, buy everyone, bring in votes, and so forth in this technique. And if, in fact, Warisan has won Sabah, I think it really tells you something about the practice of vote buying and whether or not it's not working as well. You know, it just wasn't enough. And I think you have to change how you think about Sabahans. They are actually a very strong political awakening.
Well, but is this vote buying something that happens on both sides, or is it largely the incumbents that have been practicing this?
Largely the incumbents who have resources.
Now, we have some breaking news, and this is official. In Sarawak, the independent candidate, Larry Sun, has won the parliamentary seat of Jalau, and he defeated Joseph Salang Anak Gandum of Barisan Nasional, and he won it by, I think, a majority of 8,000 votes, rather. So, and do you know the seat of Jalau, Bridget, and what can you tell us about it?
Well, it's outside of Cebu. It's a largely rural seat, heavily dependent on resources. The Singh family has had a lot of resources and was seen, and there was no PKR candidate contesting against him. And I think he has previously won, if I recall properly, in Kapit. And as a consequence, that he was seen as a favorite to win this seat.
You know, one of the things that happens when we look at independents win, we assume that they could be pulled to one side or the other in the game. In fact, you know, defections could happen even from people who are members of particular parties. Are we likely to see that happening, especially if, Jabba, the contest is very tight in either the state or federal level? Do you expect attempts to lure members of rivals over to their side in order to bolster the numbers?
Obviously, there will be attempts to lure people across the other side. I mean, it has happened before when Abdullah Badawi was prime minister. There were talks about the September 16 move by Anwar Ibrahim, and then they had to take a whole bunch of people to Taiwan on an agricultural tour. And of course, on the Barisan side, it has happened before 2009 in Perak. It's quite a common practice. It happens all the time. No politician has, I would say, the integrity to stand the ground. But I think this time is very interesting. You see the mood in the country in the last few days, and you see the results now. I don't think any independent would want to go over to the Barisan side. It's toxic.
Okay, let's move from Sabah and Sarawak. We're going to come back with more results from there. But let's look at Johor down south, also a state with strong identity. It has its particular dynamics. Bridget, I know you've been, you know, on your phone a lot. You have lots of context. And Jabba, you too. What do you see unfolding there in terms of narrative? Maybe we'll go to you, Jabba, first. Do you see anything? Are you getting any sense of the Johor game?
I think I was in Johor very briefly for a few hours in between my travels around the country. People there have a simmering resentment against Barisan Nasional, particularly among the Chinese and Indian community. But it's a very low level, under the radar kind of thing. They don't openly say it. This election has been very interesting because I think a lot of people have made up their minds, but they are not going to express their vote. Same thing as what happened in 2008. So in my brief visit to Johor, I found out, and I spoke to a fair number of people, that everyone privately said they were going to vote for the other side. because for many issues. I mean, again, rising cost of living. GST was particularly effective as an issue. And also, you know, housing prices, the fact that mainland Chinese companies were coming in, there was a surplus of housing, so property prices were coming down, and businesses were not doing too well. And even among the Malays themselves, they, I mean, it's interesting that Malays in Johor, where UMNO was born, felt that they were getting shafted.
Okay, very quickly, Bridget, before we go to the break, the Johor story, what do you understand? There have been talk about a revolt in UMNO in Johor. There was a story about Mua actually being lost to the very young upstart from Bersatu, Syed Saddiq. Zaid Hamidi came in and said, well, if our candidate loses, then he should jump in the well. I don't know if you meant that tongue-in-cheek, but what do you sense about the Malay ground, especially the UMNO Malay ground in Johor?
There's definitely been a shift. I mean, we're looking at around a 10% wave. The problem with winning Johor is you need more than a wave to win. And so I think at this point, you know, the results are still not confirmed, but it seems to be touch and go for the opposition to win that state. They seem to be a bit short of a few seats. But there clearly have been some important shifts. I mean, a 10% shift is a big shift in political studies. And I think that this state is important because it's the heartland of UMNO, and it speaks to whether or not the Najib leadership is actually protecting UMNO. And if there's any losses significant there, then I think this will have national reverberations.
I've been speaking to Bridget Welsh, Associate Professor of Political Science at John Cabot University, and Jabba Sadiq from the Malaysian Insight. We'll be back. This is Mayor Hawthorne with The Walk. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.